Miller.
Whoa. All right, welcome back to the 150th episode of Tiger Turf Talk. We're here with a good friend of the program, Ryan Bajorn. How's everything doing? How was the trip down? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all of the things.
Happy holidays to all the listeners, to you guys here. Trip down was great. Came down from Montgomery County, Maryland, where my in-laws are from. And where I spent, almost 9 years at the Soccerplex. So it was about an hour and a half, hit the typical beltway traffic. It's raining out, so
I gotta love that.
People forget how to drive, and it was a fun
reminder. For those that don't know, the beltway is the worst road on the face of the planet. If you think New York City traffic's bad, if you think really anyone else is bad, it is that times 1,000 because everybody thinks that they can drive better than the next person. I also had to shout out Boyd. Where'd you go, Boyd?
Oh yeah,
Hey buddy, hey Boyd. My man's asleep right there. Yep. For those that are watching,
we'd tilt the camera down, but we behind the scenes,
it might take an hour and a half to get him back to level. Yeah. So we're gonna get him up eventually.
Yeah, he'll move around
with the small confined space. So how's everything going? How's the season? Obviously. Chaos, and you had the Navy-Army game. Is it Army-Navy game?
Army-Navy game.
Okay, yeah. Sorry for ever. How's everything going?
It's good. It was a crazy year. Busiest event schedule in Gillette Stadium history. So we had 13, 14 concerts, Monster Jam, graduations, Army-Navy, Revs and Pats. It's been nuts. The Revs have been done for maybe a month and a half now, so we've been able to kind of put those fields to bed a little bit, which has been nice, and focus on the Patriots practice facility while we've been doing the all the games and everything going on at the stadium. So it's our quote-unquote slow time of the year. But it never really completely slows down. So.
Don't you love that?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I always talk about you and Danny having both the FC and the NFL is just something so chaotic. God bless you guys for it.
Yeah, it's fun. We love having both teams. It adds another element to it for sure. But we're already preparing for the Revs to come back. So
I was gonna say your off season's over pretty much. They're like
February. Yeah. Earlier than that. So
gosh.
we're recording in between Christmas and New Year's, and the Pats are away this weekend and home January 6th or 7th. For the last game of the year, and January 8th, we start tearing the stadium field out, and around January 15th is when the Revs will be back on site to train, and then they'll be there for a week or two and then head down to Florida for a couple weeks and then before they come back. So, yeah, it turns around quick.
Don't you love that, how they're like, hey, let's use the field. Let's get it ready. You have it ready. And then, by the way, just wait another 4 weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just start down there and then give us those 3 or 4 weeks, and then we'll be ready for you.
Yeah.
It's always fun, though.
Yep.
It's funny. Our co-host Liz is over there, and she's in heaven. Boy, that's a way to get scratches and everything.
He's so cute.
He's doing what he does best, entertaining.
Hey, nothing wrong with that, Now, something that I always like to talk about, obviously, when it comes to your facility and everything, there are things that have to happen for it. You guys obviously have artificial on the game field for reasons of the amount of work that you guys have, concerts, people. You guys had Taylor Swift?
3 times.
You guys, went all out. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Technically 4 if you count her trip to the Chiefs game that we had. So she performed 3 times and attended.
I've been talking to Travis, and he's on the keynote. I was going to use this joke for the keynote talk, but I was like, it's probably not a good idea. I was going to say, Travis, when is it going to happen when it comes out when Taylor's actually coming to see the real Travis of the Kansas City Chiefs? Mm.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But it's funny because you guys did so much for that prep. What is it like, again, having to have those situations and dealing with all the ups and downs and the waves and the 4 events instead of 3 events? Come on, Taylor. We got to know this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for us, event-wise, special event-wise, non-sporting events, we do a lot of preparation going into it so that we are as good as we can be coming out of it. We actually really enjoy the time where the flooring is down on the stadium field. That's one of the benefits of having a synthetic field is you don't have to really stress about the grass underneath or anything like that. So for us, it allows us to kind of move away from the stadium and really focus our efforts and spend even more time on the practice fields. That being said, obviously it does, I don't want to say damage, but it puts strain on the field for sure. And, our goal is as soon as they are done, whatever concert or event it is, once we get in there, we got to get it back to as safe and playable as we can, get it cleaned up and have it ready for the next big sporting event that we have going.
And a lot of that, goes into the idea of, again, it's so much more than an NFL stadium. It's so much more than an MLS stadium. So much to be done. Renovations when I got there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was.
Oh my gosh.
Probably like May of 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
Holy crap. We had talked about the video board that's now up and live. Like, there's so much more to it. Taylor Swift brings in how much money for the Patriots when you look at it face value for everything she does.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like to, have that responsibility of ensuring that, again, Taylor comes one day, MLS comes Wednesday, NFL Sunday, like being able to get through that. How do you do that with your crew and ensure that everything moves smoothly?
Yeah, a lot of planning goes in. We just got the Revolution schedule for next year. We've got maybe 5 or 6 concerts that are on the books already for next year, dates announced. And the next big thing for us will obviously be when the NFL schedule comes out in April or May or whenever it does. And as soon as we start getting, now that we have the Rev schedule, that's already mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
That we see how that falls with concerts that we have on the books, other events like Monster Jam, Supercross, how that falls. And we just start looking at those. And for now, it's a pretty high-end overview of, okay, we've got a pretty tight turnaround on this one. We've got a pretty tight turnaround on that one. And then as we get closer, we start getting into the weeds of exactly what that means. Does that mean we need to, one example I'll use this past year is we had, we had Sunday Night Football versus, I'm going to see if I can remember all this, Sunday Night Football versus the Dolphins.
Yeah.
And Monday morning, flooring was going down for the Billy Joel Stevie Nicks show, which was the following weekend. When we got the game, when we got all the schedule out, we knew that once that flooring was up, we only had, we had a Saturday night show, Stevie Nicks, Billy Joel, and then a Thursday night show the following week, which was Carol G. And we knew we had an MLS game on Saturday. So,
my gosh.
So we get that overview and the Carol G show was announced late. So we thought we had a good plan. And then of course that got thrown into the mix.
That's the best, They're like, hey, by the way, we don't care what you need or whatever it is. Just we had another show the day before.
Well, it's a double-edged sword of, being good at our jobs. It allows us to be able to host more and accomplish more and do more. And so it is a double-edged sword. But so we looked at it and we said, we know we only have 2 days to turn around for an MLS match. Mm-hmm. We likely aren't going to get access to the field until Saturday morning of the MLS match. So we knew that coming off that Sunday night football game, we were going to stay after the game and scrub all the football lines off and try and get a full soccer field down underneath the flooring.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a, quasi overnight, where it wasn't where we had to flip from MLS to NFL or anything, but we knew we were going to be there till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. So we had that planned. We did that. It rained all night, which is great for scrubbing. Much for painting.
I mean, perfect when you get rain jackets on and everything.
So we kind of adjusted on the fly. We ended up we laid out the soccer field and put one sideline down in aerosol so that the flooring guys had a straight edge to work off of.
Gotcha.
And then we knew that on that Saturday, we're going to have to make sure that we were able to get the soccer field painted. So it ended up working out okay, but it was, it was stressful. We get access to the field probably fully uncovered Saturday morning, 8, 9 a.m.
before the game.
right. Yeah. We luckily had a little bit more time. We're in there at 6, and as, 2/3 of the field is uncovered, we're already working on that part as the rest of the flooring is coming up. And, by probably 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, we were ready to go. And at that point, it was just have the guys rest and recover because we're going to be there the rest of the day for the game anyway.
What's the key for you to like keep your composure in those situations?
That's a great question. I don't know if I could put my finger on one thing.
Boyd, you're the reason it happens, but that, you know, we know.
Sure, that's legitimate. I mean, yeah. Having him around, you know, all the time is great, but at the same time, like it is something where if I need to just go in my office and sit down and just kind of like woosaw for 5 minutes, having him there, it is a great de-stressor. And I think, you know, when we're out pulling covers and he's running circles around the guys barking at him, it's not really a de-stressor. But in those situations,
Boyd, you do what you want.
Yeah, guys come in and crash on the couch and he's just there, just wants pets. And, you know, I think it is a good de-stressor for him. But it's tough to put one thing, but I think just experience, you know, getting through the first. So I started in 2019, and the week of my first week was our first preseason football game. I had never been a head guy for an NFL game. You know, it was all very new. So those checking off all those firsts and getting through it, like the first NFL game, check, made it, survived. Okay, take some mental
thriving
notes.
Still.
Right? Yeah. I'm alive. We made it. It's not that big of a deal. You know, first overnight MLS to NFL flip. Check. What did we learn? How can we improve? And just moving through those progressions and always making mental notes of things that work, things that didn't work. It kind of allows you to know that even in those really tight situations, like we've done it before, we can do it again. It's not going to be the end of the world. It's going to be difficult, and we're going to be tired. But we'll get through it, and we've done it before.
Something that I always love about the overnights and chaos, like you're saying, those are usually like the best memories. You know, like there's usually like something funny that happens, and you're like, I don't even know what to say at this point. It's 3 a.m. I'm delirious. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Yep.
But it's just funny because like when you see those things, like you said, it's just something that like, oh my gosh. Now I'm in a different situation, so my stressful situations are very rare. It comes in different forms, and you can ask that one. There's plenty of things where stress comes in.
Getting paint on the pavement the night before a game.
That was fun. So we had was that the game after Charlotte? Or?
Oh, yeah.
So we went to Charlotte, went to see Danny, and we did the ACC championship, and we came back, and we did this whole thing where it was our quarterback. He wanted to do an iced out theme or something. So it was like baby sky blue. Way the other team was navy.
Yeah.
And so we get like a message and it's like, hey, we want you to change it. And this is at 7:15 on Friday before the game. And I'm like, first of all, this is what your quarterback wants, and this is what we were doing because we're out of paint.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have any other orange or black paint, right? We schedule for the games of the season. Usually a playoff game, not the state semis into December, the first one ever.
Right.
So again, that was the reason for the theme is like iced out, snow, whatever. Mm-hmm. See if we can get it to snow on the game day, right? but the night before, two nights before, we were out there Thursday because there was rain Friday, to make sure that everything sort of dried, which it didn't, of course. But we got back Wednesday, so we painted Wednesday, Thursday into like, what was it, like 9 o'clock at night or something. And you know how paint is, you know, sometimes it doesn't want to dry, and especially at night.
Yep.
So was it you or May?
It started with May, and then it went to me.
So May is a good friend of Liz, one of the students. She was tracking paint all over the asphalt right outside, which you'll see in a bit, the entire area. Like I'm on the field painting. I'm like, guys, make sure you don't walk on paint. Make sure you don't walk anywhere else. Just make sure we're doing that, right?
Yeah.
What was she even wearing? Like
she was wearing my boots that someone else was wearing.
Okay, so someone else put paint all over the boots, and she wasn't aware of that. And so I come over, and Liz says, don't worry, it's all okay. Everything's going to be fine. I'm like,
I always have to
I don't
start
like
with
the
that.
Way you're sounding right now.
That's not
now.
The way to start a conversation.
That's not, nope, not okay. I walk over the entire area. Like
footprints everywhere.
Footprints everywhere.
Everywhere. Like, it's terrible. And I'm like, gonna breathe a little bit. I went and checked the track, the new $500,000 track, to make sure that had nothing on it. Which luckily we have this little bridge that we had and that didn't get on it, but we spent another hour scrubbing that while two people were still painting, and I was like, I just can't do this anymore. Like, this is like December 1st, right? Like, somebody get me out of here. But the worst part was when I got the like coaches, messages, and it's not our head coach. He's a great guy. He apologized and everything. But I came out the day of the rain. This is going to look like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's soaking wet. I cover it with orange paint. Come out the next day, and it is just like dog doo-doo. I'll show you a picture.
Just kind of like showed through and didn't cover as much as you want.
Nope. It was, and it looked faded. And I'm like, this is your state's semifinal game. You asked for it. So that's what it was.
Yep.
And it had just poured. So we had the digital camo. Did you see that before?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the night of.
Right.
It poured. There's still a chance of rain. So I'm going to come in tomorrow. Turn into like a light gray.
Like, you could just say that's what the look you were going for.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Right. I almost went and said, we're just going to leave the digital camo the way it is. Of course, I didn't want to be that guy because I'm stubborn and stupid.
But that's cool, though, that you guys were able to even try that and have that opportunity. Because think about like 99% of other high schools in the country.
Yeah.
You know, they are lucky to have a football field that they can even play on December 1st, let alone be like, hey, what if we ice out our logos this weekend and still have a perfect field to play on? And, you know, that, again, it's credit to you guys and the program that you're building here. It's, you know, I think about what my high school football field looked like in December in Central Maine. And, you know, it's very different climates,
yeah,
obviously.
For sure.
I think that there, it just shows a lot to what you guys are doing to be able to even have that be an option.
I'll be honest, it felt like Central Maine that night. It was frigidly cold. And Miss Liz over here decided, hey, I'm going to walk around with no shoes on because I'm tracking paint. I'm like, you're going to catch pneumonia and I'm going to get fired.
But I didn't.
I don't know how. Walking around while spraying water, freezing cold water, you know, like all over the pavement. I was like,
I'm a big proponent of grounding and going barefoot when it's nice out.
When it's nice out.
Maybe not when it's cold,
like
that cold
90 out.
That's
something.
The best time. It was like a cold shower. You know how good those are for you? I was just like,
not for your feet and only your feet. No, that's not how it works, Liz.
Yeah.
No, the thing that I'm curious about this, because I have a number in mind that I couldn't do it anymore. On the artificial, when is it too hot to have just, you know, socks or feet?
I mean, I don't go barefoot on the artificial almost ever.
Smart.
Yeah.
This is in college for people that are like you.
Well, it's not a sanitary thing for me. It's just, it's almost always too hot for bare feet.
True,
gets hot enough.
I was going to say like 50 is usually.
Yeah. I mean, if it's sunny out, I mean, it could be 60 degrees and the turf's probably, you know, 90 or something degrees out. So it can get really hot. Yeah. And you know, if it's sunny out in the summer and you're on synthetic, it can be too hot with shoes sometimes.
Oh, all right. So it was Battle of Bristol. Do you know that game?
Mm-mm.
Virginia Tech versus Tennessee at Bristol Motor Speedway.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They put an artificial in, and it was like the hottest weekend on record at in Bristol. It was like, we pull in, and we had the thermal gun or whatever. Yeah. We shot the asphalt, sitting there like 160. Bet you it's more on the artificial. One of our like mechanic guys like, nah, it can't be. He shoots it. It's like, I'm like,
yep, it's nuts how.
So like, I went through one pair of shoes that literally melted throughout the whole day when we were painting. I was like, am I leaving like, you know, footprints all over the place with some everywhere? But no, it was a fun time. But it was like dangerously hot out. I will say that. That was crazy. So, but no, that's always fun. You know. We don't usually go barefoot around here because children are children.
Dogs won't be out.
There you go. I did it once and I stopped because everyone, for some reason, took pictures and put them all over the place. But again, I'm not getting involved in that.
So. Yeah. I rarely do it. Like a nice, like 70 degree morning, and it's gonna be a nice day. It's just the best feeling.
Gotta love that. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into everything that you do. Something I love when I was up there was the fact that the facilities were two separate things, but at the same time, so similar in a way.
Mm-hmm.
What has it been like, you know, Revolution, how old is it? It was only like 6 months old, right, when I had gotten there?
Well, no, the building opened in 2019, the fields opened in 2020.
Okay, so yeah, it just... And you got the
Hydronic heating
Thank
system.
Thank you, hydronic. That's the word. I was like, hydronic.
That's what you were going for, yeah.
That's what I do after I'm like, I can say the first syllable and maybe they'll get it. But
that I think that's what it just got turned on when you got there.
Gotcha, yeah, gotcha.
Because we got it essentially hooked up and running Christmas Eve of 2021.
Gotcha. Now, there are like so many things that go into maintaining that. What has it been like to see something like that? And it's not on the Patriots practice field yet, is it?
Correct. Yeah. It's just we have the hydronic heating system on
one of the two up
Revolution
top.
Fields. Yeah. And then we have a forced hot air sub air system on the lower football field. But the unit was essentially installed into an existing outdated drainage system. So it's not like a fully functional hot air sub air system, but we get benefit.
It does work for it.
As I was driving down, I was looking at the forecast and I turned on the vac on the sub air on the way down here. Just clicked it on my phone because we're getting rain up home the next couple of days.
Add that here. You'll see.
See
poor grading when you get out.
I mean, drainage is so crucial.
Trust me. We tried to make sure they knew that. It's I'm not going to name them, but I did call you about them, and you said you had no idea who they were. So I was like, all right, here we go. This is going to be great. We try. We still try. We got a lot of work to do to fix it, but it'll get there in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
What has it been like, you know, being able to see different ways of maintaining it? Obviously, with a hydronic.
Yep.
Okay. You had a strip of Bermuda grass we had talked about. What has it been like seeing everything sort of work together there? And again, just have such a unique situation for a practice facility to have that. I know a lot of MLS teams are starting to do that, but there's also a lot of MLS teams that don't even have it on their stadium.
Mm-hmm.
What has it been like to see the impact of something like that on the way you're managing your grass?
It's been eye-opening, to say the least. I mean, we're to the point now where we're over the initial shock value of it, I think. But we also, you know, we're learning how to properly manage that system. Last year was our first full winter of having it, and we were really pleased with how much we were able to do with it. You know, we were cutting grass in January. We had kind of turned up the heat to our soil temperature. Wireless sensors are set at 3 inches deep, and so we can manipulate that 3-inch depth temperature. So we had that set at 65 degrees when we wanted to get it growing and put the covers out, and it was great. You know, when the team got there in January and they were training on it, they loved it. It was actively growing, actively recovering. You know, we had divot mix seed that was popping, and then the team left for a couple weeks again to go to their spring training. They came back. It was good, you know, maybe last week of February into early March, and then it just started kind of nosediving. The quality took a nosedive, and you know, in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense. And what it was is we didn't really have any food out there for it. You know, we didn't do any late fall nitrogen, we didn't do anything. It kind of just burned through all its carbohydrate reserves in 3 or 4 weeks in the winter because it wasn't able to make anything on its own.
100%.
So it looked great, it played great, and then it started to kind of take a quality dive. And now that we know that, looking back, like I said, makes a lot of sense. So now this year, we've changed our approach with it, and we're essentially kind of operating as a 12-month field where we've had the soil temperature. Initially, we kept it at 65, then dropped it down to 60, and then 55, and then last week we dropped it down to 50. But we did some late fall organic nitrogen out there just to have it so that it wouldn't break down on its own because the soil temperatures, as they drop down, it won't metabolize. And then that way it's there when it starts to need it and it doesn't have to go through its own reserves when we start cranking the heat back up in probably a couple weeks now. Just crazy to think about. But
like, come on, guys. Yeah. Give them 2 months. Yeah. Just let them be.
And so we've got two assistant superintendents. One that oversees the football training facility, that's Matt Lebusky, and the other that oversees the revs facility, that's Chris Hurley. And Chris has done a great job this year trying out some new PGRs out back. We've got some POA problems, and we're trying to shrink that down. So we've worked with that, and then we've sprayed PGR twice in the past probably 6 weeks. Again, not super, like almost below the lowest label rates, just to kind of when we know we're going to have the covers out, we know it's going to be comfortable and, want to grow, that we want to make sure that it's not going crazy under there and you know, keep it at a managed, healthy growth underneath. So something, if you had told me I'd be spraying PGR in December on Kentucky bluegrass in Foxborough, Massachusetts, a couple years ago, I'd tell you were crazy.
You're crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, it's take life lessons and learn everything that you can from it and adjust. And that's what he's done a great job out there with that.
I think that's what's so crazy about sort of where we come from when it comes to like just overall management practices. Like heating wasn't really a big thing, like you would think about more than a couple of places like New England and whatnot. But being able to adapt that. And then, like you're saying, like you're learning on the fly, you're seeing what it's like, you're seeing what's happening to it. That's what I love about this industry and I love about just technology moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I called Travis a couple of days back about the keynote, and we'll get into our presentation here in a bit, SFMA, but we ended up talking about like what he was doing like for like the past few weeks and prepping for his long-range forecast that he has and all this stuff. And I was like, I was just calling about the other thing, but I could talk about this for hours. It's just like it never changes, and I think that's so cool about how everything's changing in our industry, but it never changes how much we all love the new thing, like you
said. Right, yeah. I mean, it's just not being afraid to try things and, you know, accept that not everything's going to work and just learn from the things that don't work and try and tailor that into something that works even better. Yeah.
Sure. Now, we can get into it now. We're giving a talk at the SFMA this year down in Daytona. Liz was going to be a part of it, but she's not a public speaker, so she will not be partaking. You'll meet one of the other ones part of it.
Well, nobody's a public speaker until you speak in public.
Oh, I wonder who told you that.
My time will come.
Before, like multiple times throughout the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Nah, I get it. It could be intimidating for sure. And the first, we were talking about this on our Zoom for the presentation with Leah. I mean, before her first presentation last year, it sounds like she was a little bit of a wreck. I told her, it's like I was the exact same way the first time that I presented, and to his credit, Jared Minnick, who's back at the Soccerplex, he was big and kind of pushing us to get outside of our comfort zone. So he helped me with that, and you know, now it's just kind of you realize too that a place like SFMA and those presentations are great places to do your first couple talks because everybody's there for the same reason. We all want success for each other, so it's a lot of support rather than you have to be worried about what people are going to think about what you're saying. And once you get over that hump and it's like, okay, you know, that's not that big of a deal. And it's like riding a bike.
Riding a bike, Liz. Come on. I can change it real fast.
Zach just has such a great presentation.
You don't even know what it's on.
You showed me and Julie.
Huh?
You showed me and Julie together.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
She flipped that around pretty well.
I'll give her that. But, you can tell her about the one we went to last year. We won't say which one. It was you, me, and then like 600 people in the room. Yeah. I felt so bad. We were there for them, though. That's all that matters, you know.
At least six of us.
Yeah, six of us. hopefully, we'll have same numbers this year, so Leah's not trying to kill me. No, but Leah literally, like, we practiced four times. We did it, like, by ourselves. We did it with teachers from here. We did it with Danny and Maritza and a couple other people. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like, yeah, this is way too much. Just believe in yourself, even a little bit. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But no, I'm excited. I mean, so our subject, for those that are curious, it's where's the future of the sports field management industry? We got a lot of great information. Obviously, me coming from a high school perspective and programs like that. Lee is going to talk about a lot of internship stuff and how working with an intern is not just work. It is sort of a way. And you are going to bring it home with, obviously, the industry professionals that are sort of the next generation already in it, but also, you know, the workplace and how having a good and, you know, place for growth, you know. Talked about how Boyd helps with, like, having a great workplace setting and having, like, that climate and that culture. So I think it's gonna be a really great talk. Did you get to see the presentation yet or
no?
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Leah said it was great, so I'm going to go off of that for now, but you can definitely tell me if it's if it doesn't look good.
Sure, I'm sure it's going
to
be good.
I can show you today, actually, if I have that.
My goal has been to keep the laptop closed as much as possible while I'm away. I'm sure I'm going to have to break into it at some point.
So. No. I'll show it so you don't have to open it. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah.
No, but...
yeah, what is Thursday morning, 8 a.m.?
I'm telling you,
it's a tough time.
Not the best time
to get a big audience, but you know it'll be good. It's all panels, and people will filter in. And, you know, if they show up late, they show up late, and you know we'll all be in the same boat that Thursday morning.
We all expect you to be there, okay? Because if we're gonna be there, you should be there. Yeah. You know? We'll market it a little bit.
Yeah,
I've got 8 kids. I know that'll be there.
Yep.
Attendance is already higher than last year.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Don't laugh so hard over there, okay? obviously, when it comes to SFMA, there are so many things that go into that trip. You know, where you're going to do, what do you want to learn about? Can you sort of talk about what's your experience with the, you know, conference and how you sort of approach, okay, this is what I want to get out of it. This is what I can do. Sort of what your game plan is for a trip kind of like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's changed a lot since... The first couple of times I went, the first couple of times that I attended, I was there as a student with UMass. Our goal was to get down there and place as high as we could in the Turf Bowl. Granted, we never placed as high as we'd like to, but...
To be honest, we didn't try the one had. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, you know,
it's tough. I mean, we went down there competing in the four-year schools, and I think both times I competed, we only had 2 people of a 4-person team. And so, you know, not making excuses, but it's just that experience was very different than going as I was a, you know, kind of assistant superintendent, assistant manager in training. You know, each year you kind of go into it with a different mentality and different things that you want to learn about. So as a student, it was, you know, experience it, meet new people, do the Turf Bowl, go home and, you know, have a cool trip that was part of school. You know, as a assistant manager in training, it was more looking at what can I learn? How can I expand? You know, how can I be a better turf manager? Meeting new people, again, networking. That's one thing I think is pretty standard every year I've ever gone, is always trying to meet other turf managers, people you don't know, people that are in different parts of the industry, different parts of the country, different parts of the world. Just again, building that network, because that's such a huge part of what we do. But then, you know, now as I go, I'm on the educational committee for the conference, and we had one of our last meetings last week, and we were kind of talking, and Drew's on that committee as well. We were talking, you can probably help me remember, we were talking about something and
sort of prioritizing the
tracks.
So like, for those that are curious, tracks are like what we're focusing on getting across with the education itself. So like, there's a fertility track, or like soil and fertility, I should say, sorry. There's a pest management track, there's an HR track, there's human resources. Go ahead.
But yeah, so it's just, and we were trying to discuss, you know, like, do we want to change anything, or do we want to can it keep the tracks the same, and do we want to change the panels? And it got brought up, like, you know, there's a professional baseball panel and a professional football panel or whatever. And to me, it was, and somebody was like, well, the pest management or like a weed management talk's not going to get as many people, and it won't be as popular. I think my comment was like, when I was coming as a younger person, I wanted to go to the professional football one.
For
I
sure,
wanted to go to
sure.
professional base, because I found that more interesting. And now that I'm on the professional side of it, I want to go to the weed talks. I want to go to the pest management talks, because that's super important to what we're doing in the industry. So, you know, I think it's switched up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so very, very long way of answering your question about, you know, how do you approach that trip? I think it's just, you need to see where you're at in your career, you're a student, or you're an up-and-comer in the industry, or you're a head person, whatever it is, and just figure out what's going to help you the most at that conference.
And it's funny how you bring that up. Like, I'm curious how people would take it, but I've always thought that there could be sort of a joint effort in the sense of speakers. So why aren't we taking, say, like a... use people that aren't giving really talks anymore. A Dr. McNitt, who has something that research base in the NFL, sort of like maybe the Penfoot is a great opportunity to, you know, partner with you or Nick Pappas, who are there in person seeing what's going on. Something where you can sort of combine those two, but we as an organization don't force it, but like say, hey, why don't we just try and do something like this instead of just doing strictly this, you know? Which again, I agree with you in the sense of like having both talks are important. I don't know where, as the education committee, we level out what is what, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think the biggest thing for us to take home is we just need feedback. And you know, what we, at the end of the day, what we want to do is provide educational content that people want and people are going to attend so that they don't leave saying, man, there was nothing there that helped me out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're just going to say that and go home and not,
and then
comment
not say
on
it.
Anything, where if they would fill out a feedback form and say, hey, I felt like there was nothing here that helped me, this is something I would like to,
I would like to learn about,
then we can take that as a committee and move forward on it. So it's a little bit of we're trying to kind of guess in a way and go off historical conferences on what's done well and what hasn't, but getting that feedback from the attendees would be super helpful.
I will say I do think this year's conference is very unique compared to years past. I think there's a lot of great information from some of the best in this industry. And there was a couple that got replaced that were really, I think, were going to be great talks that, again, we've added more that are great. But I think this is probably the most diverse lineup that we've had. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's so hard to say because there's been so many shows and everything, but yeah, I think the goal is to open it up and have a wide range of topics that's going to, you know, appeal to the most amount of people.
I'm excited for the general session, you know, be going from FIFA to MLB and adding Dan Kiermaier, shout out Dan, to talk with Matt and Ryan. It's something that's going to be really great. I also am excited about the keynote. Not because I'm running anything or anything like that.
Has nothing to do with the fact that you're hosting the keynote.
I'm excited to, you know, I'm excited for the keynote to not be a rah-rah-rah in a sense, you know. You know, the one that I think would be really cool if we could get to happen, I think if we do this a couple of years, we can save that money to make it happen. Have something like the Kelsey podcast show up where we have two professionals and then we bring on the two groundskeepers, so Travis and Tony, and they would talk and it'd be a great time, like something like that, or there's someone else with another podcast, something similar, but getting a player here somehow, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, it's the timing of the conference would make that
100%. No, for sure.
It's a great idea.
Yeah,
though.
But something like that where it's like you're going to get people that are like, oh my gosh. Them, but at the same time, like, we're gonna have a very good discussion about, okay, this is what you guys are experiencing with our work.
Right.
What would you say would be more important, you know? Because,
well, you talk about a podcast that brings up the whole turf versus national
grass
debate.
They do all the time.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, they talk about it probably more than a lot of the podcasts do. And, you know, last thing we want to do is volunteer Tony and Travis for anything, but I mean,
I think they'd love to.
for the Kelseys to just even have them on their podcast, I think would be a really cool thing.
For sure. Even not having to come. Yeah. 100%. And again, like, it's funny because I've heard from different professionals through other people and whatnot. Some people don't care about the artificial versus natural versus whatever. It all depends on a preference and depends on performance, but like being able to sort of bring that to frame and audience, even if it's just to show what the profession is, like that's something that would be huge for us,
right?
Because as you know, many people don't know who we are, unfortunately, you know. But it's something where, like, again, we're very much on the ground level in the Northern Virginia area. People are starting to see what we do. We're the last natural grass playing surface on any stadium county, like things like that people take note of, but only Northern Virginia and really only the high school level. Not talking at the higher level or anything like that, but having someone be able to highlight someone like, you know, Travis or Tony or even you can really have an impact on more people seeing what's going on, and not like a seat at the table or anything like that, but like more recognition for the work, like you said, going from football concert, oh, by the way, I'm throwing another concert to MLS, like knowing that somebody actually does all the work that goes into that needs to be noted by somebody.
Right. Yeah, I mean it's a tough thing where that the argument, and we don't have to get too much into it, but the argument of natural versus synthetic in professional stadiums is not going to go away. It's one that's difficult, and it's not a there's an easy answer either way. Right. It depends on the situation. It depends on ownership. It depends on the teams. It depends on the event schedule. But at the end of the day, we're a revenue based business.
100%.
And we're event based business. And, you know, we have to figure out a way to make it as safe as we possibly can and with the hand that we're dealt. And that's our goal. And it's a challenge. And we as turf managers and Tony, or I'm sorry, Travis especially, is famous for saying like that's his favorite part of this industry is being challenged.
Yeah.
And finding solutions for problems that we haven't had yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's a lot that goes into it. There's no easy answer for it, but it's a discussion nonetheless.
And I think that's what also like the, you know, whole fight against artificial versus natural. Like there are certain situations like, you can't tell you, like, have a natural grass playing surface play perfect through that week of what you just talked about. Like, right. That's insane. Like, you can't actually think that.
Well, the devil's advocate side of that is, well, then just get more creative with how you schedule things.
But again, like, you're going to tell somebody that? Like, no one's actually going to listen to that.
No, I'm definitely not.
That's what I'm saying. Like, people think you can do that, but like, it's not how it works, you know? So, like, I think the biggest thing is that, I think is most important is that you guys are at the highest level. You know what you're doing. You have been working on artificial for so many years. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you understand how to make sure that it is safe for your players, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We get to like a high school level. We have a field down the road that I wouldn't let my kid play on.
Mm-hmm.
It should be condemned 2 or 3 years ago because it's nothing against the ADs because they weren't trained or told or how to do it. It's just poorly maintained. The fibers are gone. Like you can see almost a bare spot in the middle of the field. Like, hey, this might be a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, just maybe think about replacing it, you know? So it's stuff like that where I feel like that's the issue when it comes to artificial versus natural. It's not the actual like playing surfaces need this and this. It's the fact that there is sort of a hoodwinked at the lower levels when it comes to artificial.
Yep.
Because again, at the highest level, you guys are going to maintain it at the best level. You're going to replace it when it needs to be replaced. There isn't going to be if, ands, or buts. Nobody's going to be like, nah, we can get another 10 years out of it.
Right.
Like, that's not realistic. That's never going to happen.
Right.
So I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to natural versus artificial is understanding that the harm that comes from saying, hey, it's maintenance free. Hey, don't worry about it for 10 years. Like,
those are just blatantly lying to people.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what's crazy. And again, you'll see, again, in Mercedes-Benz, Parker, you, Danny, SoFi, like, you guys are constantly maintaining that synthetic.
Yep.
Okay, we just had a week and a half of concert. It's been matted down. We need to make sure we bring it up, whatever. You know way more than me. But again, it's just, I think that's so important to understand. And I think that's the big issue, misunderstanding when people are like, oh, it's only artificials. We got to get rid of all of it. Like, no, sure, they can maintain natural grass. And the other thing I find hilarious is the cost.
Mm-hmm.
The cost has been thrown out there by some people, and I'm not going to say certain people, but they were like, hey, it's like cost $3 million a year to maintain natural grass. I was like, give me that budget. Yeah. I'm telling you, just give the budget and see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
But
I think to quickly circle back to something you said before, you're talking about being the last natural grass field in your county and it making waves and being talked about. And you said, you know, only at the high school level and only in Northern Virginia. But to me, like, that's so crucial because you're going to get a lot of the people that hear maintenance-free synthetic turf, you know, last you 15 years. All the things that all these synthetic companies will tell the high schools or whatever else, you guys making a difference and having a good natural grass field is the one thing that's going to counteract that because that needs to be publicized more. That needs to be talked about more. And, you know, that'll fight that the artificial versus natural debate at the high school level and kind of the lower age groups where it's not as crucial or vital to have a synthetic field where like, I'm going to assume that high school down the road that you're talking about or that field down the road you're talking about probably didn't have 12 concerts on it last year.
Right. Exactly.
So it just has a lot of use but that can be counteracted and you can maintain a field correctly under those circumstances. You just need to have trained people and the support of the staff behind it.
Yeah. And I think that's another big part about hit the nail on the head is having trained staff. Because again, you talk about these artificials, and yeah, there's no concerts or anything like that. It can be well maintained. It's just there's a misunderstanding. One of the big things, and again, I'm not going to call those people out on my county level, is the COVID year. I brought up. I said, "Hey, who's going to be disinfecting these fields? Mm-hmm. What are we doing? Like, what's the plan with this?" And it was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "It's the same exact thing as if you were to clean off a desktop. It's plastic. It's the same concept of what you're saying the issue is, and we have to do all these things in order to bring these kids back in. But we're letting kids not wear face masks, breathe in the thing. Like, apparently, we're supposed to have masks outside, which I think, again, I agree. It's like, yo, you're crazy if you think people are going to get by off the ground. But I'm like, we need to like sort of get like analyze this." But they were like, "We'll think about it." Nothing happened. I was like, "Hey, it's like, what are we doing?" I'm not trying to like just make a problem for you. But
I'm sure at that point too, it was like people are just like, "We need to do whatever we can to get people back outside."
Exactly. Like, and again, I understand. Yeah. I think it was insane to think that, but everything you're forcing down on the teachers and everything, like,
yeah.
Maybe consider this, because it wasn't disinfected before, and I guarantee you no one's disinfected anything before that. So it's kind of like, what are we doing? Like, what's our thought process here? So, I mean, it's just sort of, y'all just sort of, and I'll get in trouble for saying something. But again, it's just, we all get in a room. And my other thing is, like, just be honest. Mm-hmm. That's, like, the biggest thing. Something with, like, the high school level, like, "Oh, we're doing it because it's better for the kids and blah, blah, blah. You can do more." Like, just be honest. Mm-hmm. It's easier for you to say, "I can spend $1.4 million than put that money into a budget over the next 10 years. It's just going to be easier for everything on our budget line. That's just how we can do it. We can use our capital improvement, whatever." And just say that's what you're doing. Because guess what? You're in charge.
Yeah.
Just make the decision.
Well, it's the whole future me thing, right?
Yeah.
It makes it easier for future me to not have to worry about that. But at the same time, you know, 7 years down the road when the field fails and you're not under warranty anymore, then where's, you know, that's where the stuff people don't talk about. You know, then you're on the hook for $750,000 to recarpet because you didn't follow the warranty to a T. There's just a lot of stuff that goes into it that doesn't necessarily get talked about, like the maintenance-free side of it, and, you know, we can do whatever we want out here all the time side of it, and where that's not necessarily the case.
Obviously, let's get away from the artificial.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, I don't mean to keep bringing it up.
That's fine.
There are so many things in this industry that, you know, find new things, enjoy. What are some of those things that, again, that you've been able to, you know, learn new things about, whether that's related to the field, related to people? What have you truly enjoyed over the past, you know, say 2 or 3 years post-COVID? Because we learned a lot of things when all of that happened. So what was the sort of end goal when it came to, not end goal, what is something that you've enjoyed? Sorry, I've got kids. I was trying to get everybody.
You're a busy guy.
No, it's, yeah, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think that it's really just, again, continuing to learn and continuing to try and get better and being forced to have challenges that we haven't had before and find new ways to kind of overcome those challenges and get creative. That's something that I've always liked doing. And so whether it's, you know, whether it's tighter turnarounds on a stadium event or trying to get practices in on natural grass fields that are 22 years old that haven't had a renovation, that don't have great drainage, and a head coach that doesn't like to go inside ever, no matter what the elements are. You know, those are challenges that we are always going to be forced to overcome. And even if we completely rebuild the fields and use all the latest technology and have every tool that we possibly can, it's not like it's going to be on autopilot at that point. We're still going to have to try and figure out, like, for example, we just stitched our lower football field with Desso Grassmaster hybrid system.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been we've had compliments from coaching staff, from players, you know, questions about it. We feel that it's already given us a little bit better overall footing where we're not having, you know, the large divots anymore. It's more of a cleat in, cleat out type situation. But, and that's great, but that also now presents us new challenges on how do we manage organic on something that we haven't, you know, really had a ton of experience with. And we know that, you know, from other, again, the whole networking side of it, talking with guys in Premier League in Europe or guys in the U.S. that have the hybrid system, you know, what are ways that they take care of the organic wood? Hey, come
fine.
Here.
Fine, we just got kiddos coming in.
So yeah, it's just trying to figure out new ways to...
Don't let the dog out.
He'll come back in. He's fine.
There we go.
That's one of the terrible things about him is separation anxiety, but it's also one of the great things because I know he's not going to leave. But yeah, so just overcoming new challenges, figuring out new ways to do things that we've done for a long time, but do them in better ways and continually improve.
So what has it been like? Obviously, you know, the hybrid system.
Mm-hmm.
Organic layer and everything, trying to combat that. Me being who I am, I'd just be scared to do anything to it because you're like, we just put like, what, $200,000 worth of fibers in there. I'm just going to start poking holes in it. Like, I don't know how. What has it been like, you know, being able to see just all of that sort of come full circle?
Yeah, I think we, you know, from talking with the manufacturer, talking with other field managers that have it, we know that solid tine aeration is actually encouraged. And so that helped because, you know, as soon as they finished, we went out there and started aerifying. Part of that is because we needed to smooth everything back out after the process was done. But managing organic, obviously, that's the hardest thing because you can't core aerify a hybrid field anymore. And that's usually most people's kind of like silver bullet when they need to manage organic is you can just pull cores, remove, and let it kind of get the oxygen that it needs. Well, with these fields and Ryan Moy, who you've had on the podcast, he's been really interesting to hear with his hybrid system how, you know, they wanted to try and do it without phrase mowing. So they just verticut almost constantly, lightly verticut. So we just finished a process about a month ago, and the team's been down there the whole time. So we haven't had a lot of opportunity to do much work, but next year will be our first full season, and I think we'll do a lot of the grooming and light verticutting, and we'll phrase mow once a year. Yeah, and we'll just try and keep the fibers upright, keep them exposed just slightly so that they don't get buried, and you know it'll be an adventure.
I know Joe Hill's got it on.
Mm-hmm.
Jack and Jill are practice field in the game. I don't remember which one.
Yeah,
but I mean, when I was there, it was just crazy. Throughout the year, you saw sort of towards the end of the year, you could see where you know maybe the cheerleaders or dance team were, and they're still green fibers, so mm-hmm. It's not really looking like a bad appeal in the sense of like it's
right.
Something that obviously hybrid pitches is a huge up and coming piece of is the FIFA World Cup because FIFA's requiring it and all the different things that go into it.
Well, I don't want to.
What I read on an email from somebody, it's required, but again, I know certain people who have said I'm not doing it. So, what has it been like, sort of World Cup? Coming in, getting prepared for all that. There are so many things that, you know, I know you can't discuss, but there are so many things that are going to be like game changers from you and I talked about. They're taking like half of the front five rows out or some of your stadium and all that. Like, what has that been like? It's coming up faster than we think. I think first one was at SFMA last year, first like preliminary meeting with everyone.
Yeah. So we've had a couple meetings. I mean, like you said, there's just so much that goes into it from a stadium standpoint. From a host city standpoint, from everything that goes into it. But what we're focused on, obviously, is the fields. And we're actually resurfacing our game field this year, taking the synthetic off, putting new synthetic in. And when we have it exposed, you know, unfortunately for the football team, fortunately for us, this will be one of the longest off seasons that we've had on the stadium field. So we know we have almost 2 months that we can work on the field. So we're take the field out, and we'll put in our irrigation main line. We'll bury all the valves, everything.
Doing half the work now.
Doing as much as we can now. Gotcha. So that way in 26, we're kind of just tearing the synthetic out, pull the gravel out, put our laterals in for irrigation, put the soil in, and then
The backbone's in, so the rest is just putting the skeleton
in. So we're already working, and we've had a lot of discussion with FIFA directly to make sure that, you know, our designs that we're putting in now are going to be, you know...
They're not going to change their mind in 26.
Right, yeah. So that's the last thing we want. But, you know, stadium construction-wise, we're still waiting on a final word on exactly how much needs to come out, where it needs to come out, mm-hmm. so that we can fit in the regulation field and the runout space and all that. But it's just a ton. It's a ton of work. And, and that's just talking about one stadium field, not even considering training.
So you're going to have all of your facilities probably be practice fields, right?
We're not 100% sure on that. Gotcha. But, you know, the Revs facility will more than likely be used.
That one's easy. Yeah, that one's set up for it.
So, yeah. But we will also have, you know, we have the three football fields. The football team will be on site. They'll have, mm-hmm. they'll be doing OTAs and vet mini camp and stuff like that. So figuring out that dynamic is going to be interesting as well.
So like, no, we need those fields. And you're like, okay, yeah. What? No.
That'll be a discussion that I'd like to be a part of.
Yeah, hopefully they include you instead of throwing you
out. So it's super exciting. I think a lot of the research that Dr. Sirach and Dr. Rogers are doing at UT and Michigan State respectively, I think a lot of what comes out of that could really have a significant impact on our industry for
the next
5 to 10 years, because we're trying to do something that's never been done,
mm-hmm.
having world-class fields that are grown inside for 16 weeks. You know, that's something that's unheard of. So there's a lot of pressure on them to figure out how to do that. But hopefully we get to utilize some of the tools and tips and tricks that come out of the research to move forward.
Now, there's a lot. Again, I've read a few lists that are kind of insane, what they're expecting you to have, things like that. What are you most excited for the event? And really just, like you said, want to try to say, what challenge are you looking forward to? Comes to this event,
grass in Foxborough. That's the one thing I'm most excited for. It's, you know, it's something that people probably get sick of me hearing me say, is how much how excited I am to have a grass field in that stadium again. And whether it's for a short term or however long we're allowed to keep it in, that I don't know yet. But you know, our goal is to have the best pitch we possibly can in there for that time. And we're excited because it's, of all the field conversions and stadium conversions, we have a pretty easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Our field was originally built as a natural grass field. We're open air. We don't have a lot of roof. not much shade that time
of year.
You're
not Mercedes-Benz Dallas. You're so fine.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're very lucky as far as that. And that's the thing that I'm most excited for sure.
Now, obviously, you know, there's a lot that goes into the event. What are some of the things that you think will be a benefit to you post-event coming out of it, you know, that'll help with staff or with facilities or whatever going forward?
Good question. Again, I think it goes back to kind of what we learned from the research between now and then. I think we'll take a lot of that and hopefully continue to improve our practice facilities and you know, our fields in general. Who knows what's going to be possible after this?
And those are what they're going to throw at you, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the better, that's like, again, we go back to the double-edged sword. The better we get at maintaining the fields, the more events we can host on those fields, which forces us to become better at maintaining those. It's a vicious cycle, but it's, you know, it's one that we're excited to be a part of.
For sure. Now, a little shift. Obviously, this past year, you were able to go to Germany, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Being a part of the international cruise, what was that event like? It was your first time doing it, correct?
Correct.
So what was that like, and how did your, you know, experience sort of, whether it was like make the year better, learn from different people across the world, what was it for you that you really loved about the trip?
Again, I think it just goes back to kind of networking and learning. You know, I got over there in March for the advanced trip with the team, just checking out the facilities, checking out the hotels, and then went back for the week before our game. So I got there the Monday morning after the Chiefs game, and I was obviously excited to see how the field held up, you know, how much work we're going to have to do on logos, et cetera. And, you know, to his credit, Nick Pappas, and we're good friends. I don't want to blow up his ego any more than it already is. But, you know, he's done a great job putting together really good crews. And I just felt very lucky to be a part of the crew of guys that we had over there and everyone. You know, from Carl at Wembley to Brian, who used to be at Arizona State, who's now just doing everything, which is...
Man is everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a recurring theme
when you're good at painting, you know, sometimes you get to go to some fun places.
And like Nick's kind of right-hand man on the international games, Mike Reno now, you know, I spent a lot of time with him painting the end zones, because that's something that we had never really done, is color block our end zones at Gillette, which, knock on wood, we won't have to do.
don't listen to anybody.
But I learned a lot from him on technique, and there's a running joke at those crews, like, the thing that gets talked about more than anything else is paint tips.
The way that Danny talks about tips and everything.
So we thought we had a pretty good grasp on tips. I came out of it. I learned so much. Yeah. And a couple weeks after Germany was Army Navy for us.
Yeah,
and so that was a great opportunity to take what we learned over there and use it on the color blocking our end zones for Army Navy. And I texted Mike and I was like, man, I just want to say thank you for all the time you spent with us. And I know I was asking a million questions about tips and height and wand length and all these other crazy things, but it really helped us out for Army Navy. So just the camaraderie, the learning, the networking. The game was not all that enjoyable. So that wasn't a great part of it. But being in Germany for a week.
So you were in Germany. That's always good.
It was, the people in Germany are so friendly. We had four vans all week for our staff. We had, 15, 20 guys, and our drivers were all locals. And by the time I got there, all our crew was on like first name basis with all the drivers. We essentially said, you guys pick where we go to lunch every day. They brought us to new spots every day and tried new things. And so the cultural aspect of it was awesome. For sure. Yeah.
And Oktoberfest. Did you guys get to do anything with that?
No, that was almost.
Yeah. There are a lot of things. Obviously, we have more kids in here now that, you can teach and we can learn from. What is something that you wish that these kids would know when it comes to going into? One of our alumni, Julie, she's a senior at Virginia Tech, spent a year in the NFL, and just what would be your sort of two cents to them when it comes to pursuing something in this field?
This is a lot of pressure because I'm actually looking.
They're actually here. That's right.
I think I might have even said it the first time I was on the podcast. My big thing that I was pushed into, one of my mentors in the industry, Weston Appelfeller, he was just like, go anywhere, do anything, take this time now to experience different things and go to different places, because once you get to the point in your career where you're comfortable, then you're probably going to be there for a long time, and you want to experience as much as you can between now and then, so that you know once you get to that point, okay, I've tried all these things, I'm now doing something I really truly love and I'm comfortable staying here. You don't want to kind of get to that point and be like, man, I wish I had tried this. Man, I wish I had gone there. What would it have been like to try something else? So that's my big thing, is just try as much as you can with internships or entry-level jobs or whatever it is to see different places, try different things, and that way you can know what you're going to enjoy down the road.
Well, I know we could do this forever, podcast for 5 hours, but I'm going to cut us off here. I want to thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
Long trip, I know, but I appreciate you coming down and seeing everything.
So excited to
come down to show you around in the pouring rain, obviously. Yeah. That's going to be great.
Yeah,
Boyd, great. You're going to get a little wet. Sorry, buddy. But again, thank you so much for everything.
And yeah.
We'll see you soon. All right?
Appreciate you having me.